This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Libyans found themselves with three competing governments Monday after skirmishes in the capital between forces of former Prime Minister Khalifa Gweil and the UN-supported National Unity Government of Fayez Sarraj. A third government under interim Prime Minister Abdullah Thani continues to control most of the east of the country.
That's Edward Uranian reporting from Cairo. Details coming up.
Also, the Nigerian government says it's ready to negotiate for the release of 83 more schoolgirls kidnapped 2 years ago by Boko Haram. And many businesses in the capital, Bujumbura, are hurting after more than a year of political violence in Burundi.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the 21 girls released by Nigerian militant group Boko Haram have been reunited with their families, and Nigeria's government has raised the prospect of negotiating the release of an additional 83. From Abuja, Chika Adua has the latest on the girls' release and what could be ahead.
These are the voices of families in tears as they celebrate the return of 21 Chibok girls.
When she saw me, she couldn't say anything. She was just crying, you know. And she was saying it was just like a dream, as if it's something they've given up on. They never thought they would make it through, but lo and behold, they are out. And it's that smell of freedom or something else.
Dr. Alan Manasseh described the moment one of his cousins saw him on Sunday at the official reunion ceremony with other Chibok families in Abuja. He reunited with two of his cousins who were kidnapped by Boko Haram in April 2014 from their secondary school in Chibok. One is named Gloria Dame, who was 18 years old when she was kidnapped. The other one is Mariamu Lawan. When he saw them, he became overwhelmed. He also notes they look like they had suffered.
I say it's difficult to describe the feeling, you know. They look leaner than when they were abducted.
None of his cousins came back with any children, Manasseh says. He also said they told him they were not forced to marry any Boko Haram members. But their lean bodies are proof that they experienced hunger while they were held captive by Boko Haram. One of the cousins, Gloria, said some of the girls had no food to eat for 40 days. The Nigerian government says talks are continuing to bring back another 83 of the nearly 200 girls kidnapped by Boko Haram. Whether or not a ransom was paid for the 21 released last week remains unclear. The Nigerian government denied a report from the Associated Press that millions of dollars were paid by the Swiss government on behalf of Nigeria. The Nigerian government also says no imprisoned Boko Haram members were exchanged for the girls. But Iman Shehu, one of the leaders of the Bring Back Our Girls movement that has advocated for the kidnapped girls' release, doubts the government's story.
We think that something happened, that even when government say officially nothing happened, it turns out that something did happen. That has always been the history of negotiating for hostages in the hands of terrorists.
Shehu says the group will watch for the rest of the month to see if other girls are rescued. If not, it will continue to put pressure on the Nigerian government. For now, Chibok families will hold on to the memory of what it felt like to hold their daughters for the first time in 2 years. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Niger's interior minister says an attack today by gunmen on a high-security prison has been repulsed, with one attacker being killed. Reuters quotes Mohammed Bazoum as saying the attack was an attempt to free Islamist militants being held in the Kutukale prison, about 50 kilometers northwest of the capital, Niamey. The interior minister did not say whether any inmates had escaped. He does say the situation is under control and Niger forces are hunting attackers who are still at large. Some members of Nigeria's Boko Haram militant group are being held at the prison, but it is not clear if that group is responsible for today's attack.
The International Court of Justice is holding hearings on demands by Equatorial Guinea that France halt a corruption case against the son of its long-term president, who is also vice president of the country. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA that Teodoro Nobiang is accused of using public funds to pay for his lavish lifestyle.
Luxury cars, famous paintings, cartons of red wine, and a six-story mansion in a chic neighborhood of Paris. Those were just part of the assets French authorities seized 4 years ago as they pursued a corruption case against Teodoro Obiang, son of Equatorial Guinea's hardline president, Teodoro Obiang Nguema. 47-year-old Obiang, who is also the country's vice president, has long been known for his jet-set lifestyle. His extravagant purchases include jets and Michael Jackson memorabilia. But on Monday, his lawyers argued before the International Court of Justice that French authorities, not Obiang, had violated the law.
Venimos ante ustedes hoy para solicitar medidas provisionales.
Lawyer Maurice Kamto told the Hague-based court that Obiang, as vice president and the Paris mansion, ostensibly part of Equatorial Guinea's embassy, benefited from diplomatic immunity. Lawyers for France will be making their arguments Tuesday. The case against Obiang was initially spearheaded by anti-corruption NGOs in France as part of broader charges against several African leaders. Last month, French judges ordered the seizure of properties belonging to the family of Republic of Congo's president, Denis Sassou Nguesso. International Federation for Human Rights Africa Director Florent Gel hopes the legal proceedings send a message that France is no longer a haven for corrupt leaders.
That means that we can't just say that we support, that the French government, for instance, support the people, their claimings, including for more democracy and the respect of human rights, and at the same time welcoming the massive perpetrators or even the people who are stealing their own people. It's a question of credibility and rationality.
Obiang has also faced embezzlement charges in the United States. Equatorial Guinea is rich in oil and gas, but the majority of its citizens live in poverty. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Libyans found themselves with three competing governments today after skirmishes in the capital between the former Islamist-supported Prime Minister Khalifa Gouil and the UN-supported National Unity Government of Faiz Sarraj. Both governments are competing for power in the west of Libya. A third government under interim Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Tini continues to control most of the east of the country. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Tensions reached a boiling point in the Libyan capital Monday as rival militia groups waged a low-level turf war in a political battle between the UN-backed National Unity Government of Fayez al-Sarraj and the unrecognized Islamist-supported government of Khalifa Gouil. The Unity government continued to hold one of the seats of power at the Rixos Hotel, which the country's former legislative body, the General National Council, also considers to be its headquarters. Militia forces loyal to Gouil, who call themselves the Presidential Guard, seized other government buildings over the weekend.
القسم الشرعي الوحيد في ليبيا هو المؤتمر الوطني العام وبذلك فإننا نقوم بتسليم المقرات الرئيسية.
Libyan TV broadcast a statement by members of the guard saying they support Gouil and the GNC and asserting the unity government is an attempt to place Libya under a new military dictatorship. Gwail, who is supported by the hardline Islamist Mufti of Tripoli, seized control of the old governmental palace called the Guest Palace and several other government ministries, but insisted he did not want to spill any Libyan blood.
لم يتم اقتحام القصور وإنما بإرادة نفسية جاءوا هؤلاء يوم الثوار لحرس الرئاسة.
Gwail told Arab media that he had not retaken the government buildings by force, but by popular will. He also claimed that he had contacted rival Prime Minister Abdullah Athini in Tobruk in order to form a new government together. Gwail argued the Siraj unity government was a failure, and it is necessary to reassert control in order to keep the country financially stable. Presidential Guard militiamen who seized government buildings in Gwail's name have reportedly not been paid in 6 months. The UN Special Envoy for Libya, Martin Kobler, tweeted Monday he was saddened by civilian casualties in Tripoli and at a government airbase. He went on to call for unity in the country. Libyan political analyst Khalid Sharif told State TV the situation in the country had returned to square one. He says the unity government has not done anything for the country, and it has not even visited most towns and cities. He stresses the situation in the capital, Tripoli, is confused, and it is possible rival militias might resort to arms and ignite a new civil war. Libya has been in turmoil since the NATO-backed overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The 21 girls released by Nigerian militant group Boko Haram have been reunited with their families. The Nigerian government says it's ready to negotiate for the release of 83 more schoolgirls. And an attack today by gunmen on a high-security prison in Niger has been repulsed, with one attacker being killed. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The head of the Zimbabwe Tax Authority says the proposed introduction of bond notes may actually worsen cash shortages in the country. A statement released by William Bayongwe, chairman of the Revenue Authority, says the bond notes would introduce public uncertainty into the economy. Bayongwe says people want to keep their U.S. dollars because there is a serious confidence issue with bond notes. Central Bank Chief John Magudia has told a local newspaper the government is delaying issuing the bond notes until November, when legislative approval is expected.
More than a year of political violence in Burundi has taken a toll on many businesses in the capital, Bujumbura. Reporter Moses Havyarimana visited Cibitoke, a neighborhood that's been especially hard hit.
Cibitoke is a five-minute drive from the center of Bujumbura. It's one of the suburbs where protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza took place. Hundreds of residents here relocated to safer zones, while others fled the country due to the violence. The once busy streets of Cibitoke are now patrolled by police. I met a cobbler who didn't want to reveal his name for security reasons. He says only God will help him and his family to survive. He says there is no money, and that most of the people who fled with their money and capital, and that you can even see the streets are almost empty. He says most of the people abandoned the area and fled because of the fear for their lives. He says that he is undergoing difficult times, that even to get something to eat, for the family it's becoming a problem. He prays to God that things will change. Each year, the 17th of October is regarded as the International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. Natalie Buckley, director of the United Nations Development Programme in Burundi, says, in Burundi, the majority of the people live on about $1 per day. She adds, the government and all stakeholders to meet the needs of citizens for the sake of the present and the future generations. Akeza Caroline is a Chibitoke resident, a hairdresser, and a mother of three children. She is worried that her business is failing and doesn't know what the future holds for her. She says she used to work with her hands, but now they no longer get customers. She says they can even go for the entire month without getting a single customer. She said they used to earn $100 per day, but now the things have changed. They get $20 for the whole month, which is not enough to pay for the rent, salaries for the workers, and home expenses. She says she's really facing a serious challenge. The Burundi government launched a poverty reduction strategy last year. This involved creating job opportunities for the youth and empowering the agricultural sector to reduce hunger in the country. According to the Global Food Security Index, Burundi ranks at the bottom of the list for intensity of food deprivation and prevalence of undernourishment. Its Human Development Index is also extremely low. Akeza, the hairdresser in Chibitoke, calls the current financial situation appalling. She says that's why they are raising alarm for the things to change. The situation should change so that they can go back to the life they used to have. She thinks the government should change its approach and work towards resolving this financial crisis, most especially reducing poverty in the country could be the best way to overcome this. She says otherwise, they don't know where they are heading. Though some businesses have reopened and started to fully operate in Burundi's capital after last year's political crisis, many small businesses, especially in the Bujumbura neighborhood where protests against the president were held, are still feeling the backlash. The violence began in April of 2015 when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in the office. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
In the DRC, participants in an African Union mediated dialogue are expected to unveil a controversial deal to hold elections in April 2018. The country's main opposition coalition has boycotted the talks and called for a general strike Wednesday. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
More than 6 weeks after it started, the national dialogue between supporters of President Joseph Kabila and a section of the Congolese opposition is set to conclude. An accord finalized during the weekend is to be adopted, and the forum is to be closed on Tuesday. But a larger opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, has rejected the dialogue from the outset and is calling for a second, more inclusive forum. They say the opposition delegation at the talks, led by one-time presidential ally Vital Kamerhe, did not truly represent their interests. VOA spoke with Freddy Matangulu, a senior politician from the Rassemblement.
Pour nous, ça, ce sont les propositions.
Matangulu said that this accord is simply the propositions of the presidential majority, the name given to Kabila's political alliance. He said Kamerhe's delegation is an integral part of the presidential majority and Kamerhe has rediscovered his political family. Now that the presidential majority has finished its reflections, Matangulu claims, the inclusive dialogue should start as quickly as possible, and the Rassemblement is ready to make concrete proposals. But for the dialogue's participants, the agreement is a roadmap to a transitional government and credible elections. According to a statement from Kamerhe's office, the accord will allow Kabila to remain in office until the next presidential election, to be held in April 2018. In the meantime, a government of national unity will be formed, and Camaré is a strong favourite to be named Prime Minister. In contrast, the Rassemblement says Kabila should step down on December 19th at the end of his second and, according to the constitution, final term. The president's opponents argue that he has delayed elections to gain extra time in office. The proposed date of April 2018 for the next elections is also controversial. On October 1st, Corné Nanga, the president of the Electoral Commission, said he would need until at least November 2018 to organise the polls. And he repeated the statement 2 weeks later in Washington. Matangulu says the Electoral Commission under Nanga is not serious because it is in connivance with the presidential majority. He accuses Nanga of creating confusion by saying one thing in Washington and another in Kinshasa, and of spreading what he calls a regime of lies. The Rassemblement has called a general strike for October 19th to apply further pressure on Kabila. The strike date is exactly 1 month after a demonstration in Kinshasa during which more than 50 people died, according to the United Nations. On Monday, the European Union, which has been supporting the dialogue, said elections should be organised in the shortest possible timeframe during 2017. The statement said that the European Union will use all the means at its disposal, including targeted sanctions against those responsible for serious human rights violations and who try to obstruct a consensual and peaceful solution to the crisis. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
A popular Somali newspaper remains closed and its editor is in detention for a second day in the capital, Mogadishu. Workers at the Hogogal daily newspaper say Somali government forces raided their offices Saturday night, arrested the editor, Abdi Eden Guled, and seized printing equipment. The National Union of Somali Journalists condemned the arrest and called for the release of the editor. Hogogal is the longest-running daily newspaper in Mogadishu and was founded in 1991. The arrest, detention and harassment of journalists is a regular occurrence, and the country is considered one of the world's most dangerous places for journalists. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we look at the role of the Darfur Women Action Group in Western Sudan. We'll discuss what key issues the organization is tackling in Darfur. That's next on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.